hubbub, whatever you like. We're just checking this out, that's all. Get to know the person next to you. Read over, share, deodorant, toes. Check 1, 2, 3, 4, that's good.
Differentiating. I know it's not middle school, but man, it's a lot of fun to imagine. That's like so cool. I grew up skateboarding in San Jose, California. I'm a product of Santa Clara County Public Schools. Anybody from Santa Clara County Public Schools in here? Besides the one person? All your loss. You could be just like me. No, it's a lot of fun, but a lot of times people feel like it's a long walk off a short pier. As you get into differentiated instruction and like you're overwhelmed in how to do it. So this is not myth busting 101, though we will bust some myths. This is not principles and perspectives, grading and assessment, though we will talk about those things from time to time. This is cut to the chase. What does it look like? What does it feel like as you're going through the lesson? There's no way we can do this properly in 75 minutes. So understand, it is the Reader's Digest version. It will give you a sense of the behind the scenes and the mindset. In fact, I like to suggest that 80% of differentiation is mindset. Only 20% is craft and mechanics of pulling it off. What's going to happen is I'm going to do some slides up here. We'll talk about a few things. And then I'm going to sit here for the majority of the workshop. And I'm going to type as fast as I can. Some of you may not be able to see me around the corner. If you want to move, that's fine. But if you actually prefer not to look at my face, that's really all right. You hear my voice. And I will type up a lesson. The lesson that we do with your give me ideas, I will save until the end of 2010. So on December 31st at midnight, yeah, right, I'm really going to wake up and do this at midnight. Or, well, maybe I'm not in bed yet. Maybe it'll be fun. But at any rate, because it will be New Year's Eve. Anyway, know that I'm going to delete this. So you have until the end of December to say, I'd like a copy of that thing we invented way back in Baltimore in November. So you don't have to write it down. I'm going to press save. Now, if there are like 40 of you from the same building, could one of you just decide to take it from me? So I'm going to get 40 emails from the same building, and no, they'll send it to you. If you like these slides I'm about to show you, I know it's a little weird because you guys, every time I do that, you guys are like, bleh. It's poorly set up. The presenter's up here, but all the main stuff is that way. And the chairs are facing this way, and all the main stuff's that way. So it's a Rubik. Whatever. Take a draw with me, but try to participate. So understand that I will send you these slides. You have to decide whether or not you want the black and white for photocopy, or you want the color versions for redelivery back in your building. It's really okay. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. As I've told the other groups so far at the conference, you can put your name on the very first slide and just tell the rest of your faculty, here's a few notes I threw together. It's really all right. I don't care. This stuff I'm about to do is based on a book I wrote. This is a shameless plug in case you didn't recognize it. The book is called Differentiation from Planning to Practice. It says for grades 6 to 12, but really it's pertinent down to third grade as well. But if you don't say something about high school teachers, they won't buy it. So, the curriculum examples, the worrisome things, are all high school, middle school. They really are very appropriate. And I also do a section on, and here are all the things that can go wrong, and what do you do about it? So no, it's very practical. It's like, okay, I'm going to sit down and do a differentiation lesson because my district wants me to do it. So, okay, the buses have left. I've got all my in-service handouts. I've got these articles on differentiation instruction. Okay, I'm going to go, you know, the plants on the windowsill aren't going to water themselves. Let me take care of that. Oh, I think I need to redo my seating chart. I can do that real quickly before I start. We tend to put things off. And it turns out to be a lot easier than you think. Except it takes a lot of time when you first do it, but so do a lot of things worth learning, worth doing. And I have to remind you what I said to the principals this morning when I talked about, well, it wasn't just principals, teacher leaders, when I talked about how do you motivate staff, you really have to practice stuff to get good at it. So for you to say, give me something I can use tomorrow, well, there'll be plenty of that now. But if you want to differentiate, you have to get good at differentiation. Here's the difference between you and me. I had to do this out of survival since 1981. If you're just starting, do you think I have a head start on you? Yeah. It's the only difference. So I was right where you are. There is no beeping way I could differentiate. You totally can. In fact, when people say that to me, I almost want to laugh in their face, but I don't because I'm polite. There are people in extraordinarily dire circumstances. No money, dirt floor, benches, thatched hut, no roof. I know, I'm laying a little thick there. But the differentiate is fine. I think I can teach algebra sitting in an empty parking lot. I have all the tools I needed to teach algebra. To me, that's the consummate teacher. You can take anything around you and teach major principles. You absolutely can do that. Technology, other things, they better advance my teaching learning experience in my classroom beyond that which could have been achieved had I not done it, had I not used it. Otherwise, I don't use it. So I love technology. I am so into technology, but a better advanced pedagogy at every turn. Not just, look how pretty. No, I need to be efficient and effective all the way through. So no, we're going to do real quick, here's an idea for like 10 minutes, maybe 12, and then we're going to get into the actual lesson design. So I'm not going to teach you flexible grouping. I'm not going to teach you about tiering tasks. I'm not going to teach you about respectful tasks. I'm not going to teach you all this stuff. I'm going to say, here's a slide on it. And I want to inspire your own pursuit, your own self-journey. If you would like, I will send you a much longer PowerPoint
when I do day-long and three-day-long seminars on DI. Welcome to look at it, get some more ideas. I can recommend books for you. It's very, very cool. But know that right now, we're just going to focus on lesson design. All right? In case some of you need it, there's the email and the phone number. So if you don't have a handout, does anybody not have a handout? Are there any in the back of the room? Jim has some. He's in the white vest in the back of the room. If you will see Jim at the back door if you want a handout. But if you want to email me, that's fine. Those of you who've seen me present before at this conference, remind the room, after what time of the day, East Coast time, do you not call me? 5 o'clock. I'm a dad and a husband. I have two kids and a wife. I'll put you off. But hey, before then, chances are you're back in your building. Especially if it's like towards the west, Midwest or Mountain or Pacific time or other places, you might be in your building. Which means you can use a school's dime to say, I'm doing professional development. I'm calling Rick. That's okay. But email, cool. I like to Skype if you want to do that. That's okay, too. So do whatever you like to do, but know you've got the access. You don't have to just listen to the guy and you never see him again. Oh, one last little sidebar. Please understand that we're looking for people who write articles for magazines and journals. And I work with some of the top editors, including NMSA's editors, for Middle Ground and Middle School Journal. If you'd like to write about your journey in differentiated instruction or any aspect of middle-level instruction, leadership, assessment, I don't care, we'd like to hear from you. And I'd be glad to coach you with some of your article writing. I do have a PowerPoint I can send you on advice on how do you write education articles if you're a little bit nervous about it. But know there are people out there waiting for your wisdom. Yeah, first-year teachers, I'm talking even to you. Pre-service teachers trying to figure this out, I'm talking to you too. We would love to get a piece from you. So know that's there, it's available to you as well. Now, reminder, you can differentiate 11-7 bajillion ways. They'll all boil down to one or more of these five. I guarantee it. Just remind yourself of what they are, though. You might adjust the content. Adjust the pacing and delivery if you want with that. But that's usually the last thing you want to touch because that's your legally mandated curriculum in most places. Process is the way they learn it. Product, the way they prove they learn it. I could give different assessments as long as I hold kids accountable for the same universal factors. It really doesn't matter unless I'm teaching the product. Then you have to do the thing I'm asking you to do. A group I was talking with yesterday, I reminded them of this in an example. A kid came up and said, I don't test really well, and you want us to do like a persuasive essay. I don't write either, but I understand how to do it. And you like alternative assessment. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So instead of a persuasive essay, could I do like a persuasive diorama? No. Okay, how about a persuasive puppet show?
Do it now.
No.
I said do it now.
Okay. No, that's not DI. You have to do the product. Because I'm teaching the product called persuasive essay. But if I was testing them on photosynthesis, on Krebs cycle, glycolysis, they would need to actually, they could do an interview, they could do a website dedicated to it. As long as I hold them accountable for the same universal factors, we're okay. So some of these are negotiable. Affect is a social-emotional atmosphere. I might need to deal with that for some kids. Other kids are fine. They're copacetic. Other kids are dealing with the fact that this morning their parents yelled at them and the bus driver yelled at them. And so they walk into my first period class just shaking. And it's really hard to concentrate. Think about the last time you actually yelled at your partner, your wife, your husband, whatever it is, your significant other, right before you drove to school. And isn't the whole argument going through your head as you prepare lessons? It's hard for you to think. So we can be understanding. That's a social-emotional atmosphere. I might need to deal with something there with the kid. And then learning environment usually is the physical environment. So I have single-gender classes or not. I have small teacher-student ratio or not. I've got assisted technology, seating chart. They're near the lighted window. They're not near that because it can be distracting. That physical environment, the group learning environment. All five of these are the ways that we differentiate. When you get into the differentiation literature, you discover so many cool practical ideas. So if I'm describing anything new or kind of interesting, write a note to yourself as a silver bullet idea. Pursue differentiated products. Pursue affect. That seems important to me. That's cool because it'll be different for different people in the room. These are all the ways that you can group kids. Do you notice, those who were with me yesterday, those who were with me today, when I refer to differentiated instruction, I never say ability. Please don't you ever say ability, grouping, knock it off. What? That's coming out a little hard, Rick. Aren't you stepping on a few toes out there? Yeah, I apologize for that, but not really.
Ability implies something permanent. It is your essence. It is unchangeable. When I talk about your ability, you try to protect your reputation if it's a high ability. Oh, I'm always a kid who gets it first or gets it right. And you never stretch yourself. It limits you. It moves kids into panic zone because ability sounds so permanent, it's not changeable. But readiness, there's hope. I'm not ready, but I can become so. Do you hear the hope? Think about this. Those of you with little or no ability gather here. Those of you with high ability, you get, some of you are snickering at that. Yeah, I hear teachers do that all the time. What if I said this? Those of you ready for just the first few steps, the introductory level, you're going to gather here and do this thing. Those of you ready for the next level of challenge, you're going to gather here and do this thing. It's cool because the expert in anything is once a beginner. So speak in terms of readiness. Are you ready for this or are you ready for this? Because it's so transitional. That's what middle school is, in transition. Temporary conditions. So we've got readiness. I can group kids according to that. Interest. Kids are into basketball or something. I pull it out. They're into Lost. And, what's Jack going to do now? And Hurley over there. If you don't understand what I just said, I'm going to sick Saeed. Okay? Then learning profile could be all the factors that affect our learning. So the kid is ADHD, ADD, or just H, and you know who they are. Kid is gifted in that, interested in that, manga, anime, cartooning, whatever it might be. Multiple intelligences, learning styles, IEPs, 504s, whatever it might be. Just put it all together, and you know what? I'm on leave right now so I can train teachers and principals, but right before I left, I got a PDA. Take the stylus out, just pull the kid's name, and write down things I observed. Oh, it doesn't know where to put a comma in a divided quote. And I know to pull that up, and I know to put that in my planning next time. I used to take, I was like a hamster with sunflower seeds in his cheeks, post-it notes in my pockets. I'd walk around the room, kind of like this, and I'd pull a post-it out, and I'd like, a struggle, write it down, and make a cockeyed pile of post-it notes in my lesson plan book. And it was opened up on the table in the front of the room, and then I would just sort them later. I need to worry about this now? Worry about it 3 weeks from now. Put it in a manila folder. A PDA, I don't have to do that anymore. So anything that was a fact that affects us in our learning. In 1989, there were 35,000 people killed in an earthquake along the coast or the border between Pakistan and India. A whole bunch of my kids were from Pakistan and India. They left my sixth grade classroom to go dig through the rubble for their relatives for about 2.5 weeks. Does that impact their learning? Yeah, it gets written in the learning profile. So good, bad, in between, any factor. This is going to play an important role later in the lesson design. Now, from this slide on are just cool tips you'll read about in all those good books on differentiated instruction. I'm talking 3 to 4 or 5 books if you can in the first year, if you're just getting into this. Try your very best. By the way, there's no book you can read that will tell you how to differentiate. There's no video. There's no presenter you can hear that will tell you how to differentiate. It doesn't exist. Stop looking for it. But a little bit from that book, a little bit from that book, a little bit from here, and you bring it to what's going on. You can't take something as a template in one teacher's class and insert it in your class and it works perfectly the same way. So be that highly accomplished professional. If I give a science example and you teach language arts, or if I give you language arts and you teach government or something else or PE, don't sit there and go, well, it must not apply to me. I'll wait till it gives an example from my curriculum area. Can you be like more professional than that? That what I just described is what I used to think early in my career. You gotta not do that because every single thing I'm saying, I actually teach to college professors at all those esoteric subjects. I teach to high school teachers, primary, pre-K teachers. The universals are all the same. So please understand, you pull out what you can use. If you can't see it, I hope you'll push me. I hope Socrates, that guy used to hang out with Plato, is a good oh, good. Late in the day, and the coffee's kicking in. That's good. So these are great ideas on how do you arrange groupings so they're flexible. The only thing that's not on there, online groupings. So wikis, PB wikis, names, whatever you might have, listservs. You can add them on there. They can actually do the stuff if you wanted to. And then ebb and flow. You got to have independent small group, independent whole class, independent small group, back and forth over the course of a week. You've got basic principles of DI, how assessment is not severable. Let me stop everything so I can assess you. That's called a test. Not assessment. Assessment is whatever you do to gather data so you can make a decision. It's not whatever you do to gather data. It's so you can make a decision. It comes from that wonderful, the word, assidere.
Anybody remember Latin? Anybody go to Catholic school and know what that means? To sit for something. To walk next to you. See, that's cool. So assessment is this wonderful instructional tool. You can't have good assessment that does not instruct. You can't have good instruction that does not assess. So stop thinking it's a duality. These are principles in differentiated instruction. Look at all these. A respectful task.
You can't analyze literary devices in a novel. So here's some mural paper. Do a body outline and decorate it as a character from the book, and we'll hang it in the room. What does it teach the kid about analyzing literary devices? It doesn't. Please don't ever hold an ancient Greece festival, and all the children learn is how to keep a toga tied to their shoulder. Substance, not foo-foo fluff. That's the eye. It's far more demanding of kids when you differentiate. Tiered lessons, I'll raise or lower the complexity. Compacting the curriculum for those kids who already get it. I shall not mire you in what you already know. That's known fondly as time suckage. Scaffolding, some kids need more support or less support. The goal of every single teacher is to put himself out of a job. Oscar Wilde said that. That's exactly what I do. Oh, let's follow what I do. Direct instruction. Slowly pull away the supports until you can fly solo. If it's a waste of your time to be with me in June, I win. Then we got respectful. We'll talk about this. There's other ideas there. I want to get to the one right after this. You have 5 slides of models of instruction. Ladies and gentlemen, there are about 25 models of instruction that are commonly accepted. But if you read them, you see they blur into each other quite often. So just get good at like 5 or 6, you'll probably be fine. Take a look at this one though. Ready? Direct instruction. Look very close. I skim through it. That sounded like an oxymoron. Look closely, skim through it. Anyway. See if you recognize it. Does it look recognizable? Madeline Hunter, I heard it in the front row here. It's the most common model used in North America. Canada, United States combined, most common model. Is it a good model for a differentiated class? Oh, it's awesome! Unless it's the only model you ever use. So in a differentiated class, you mix and match models. You develop your professional dexterity. There's versatility in your mind. That's actually a 21st century skill. Might as well model it, not just tell them about it. Learning profiles, lots of the models there. Then, a section a little here on tiering. Raise or lower the complexity or challenge level. Some ideas on how you might set it up. Like you might have a whole class working on something for half an hour, 45 minutes, and many lesson pullouts. The group on the right, bomb the vocabulary test. I need to go over those answers with them, correct their understanding, or misunderstanding. This group never took the vocabulary test. Can you pull them out and give it to them? This group doesn't know where to put a comma and a divided quote. This group down below, they're an independent advanced study, one of those anchor or satellite activities. So I'm going to pull them to work on their independent project. But they're working autonomously. I've taught them how to work when the teacher's not available, and I pull out. I used to think there were only 2 ways to differentiate. Say it louder and slower. That was the end of my repertoire. No, I had to teach a variety of levels all at the same time in a 47-minute class. How do I do that? Please understand, by you showing up here today, by you exploring this and reading any books, you're being subversives. It's countercultural, because most schools, particularly middle schools, unfortunately, are not set up to teach the kid who deviates from getting it first. Anyone needs more or less, or a different angle of approach. All school, the way it's set up, the factor model, conveyor belt, you're 12, you learn this, you're 13, you learn this. We have 1 week for this unit, that kind of thing. Goes against everything we know about human psychology. So we spend an awful lot of time walking into our buildings, negotiating with ourselves for what level of hypocrisy we will tolerate this day. And some days are more tolerant than we should be. So fight the good fight, 51% of the time or more. Majority of the time, can you do the right thing? Yeah, you probably can. This is a football, this is a poor man's version of the football. It's another way to tier. I give you 10 to 15 minutes of a global lesson, no DI, and then they break it out and explore their own ways according to the learning profiles, remember that? And then we come back together and we summarize at the end. So it's narrow, wide, narrow. I can have the exact same content at different lexile numbers as one example. So in other words, different readability challenge level, same content. By the way, if I can't find it at a lower level, I write it. You can do that, nothing's stopping it. Go ahead, go. Then, lots of cognitive science stuff. Turns out when you get a DI, you gotta get up to speed in cognitive science. Like, check this out. Teachers ask 80 questions for each 2 asked by students. Betty Hollis, who's here at this conference and phenomenally cool. Very funny, very practical. She's here. She presents research that says that teachers ask 80 for every 2 asked kids. Here's the thing from cognitive science. Whoever asks the questions does the most learning. Videotape yourself. I did that when I went through National Board Certification. Changed my teaching. See if you ask one less question than kids do. You have to create such a compelling learning experience that can escape only by thinking. Make sure kids ask one more question than you do every single day. What should never happen in a court trial? Lawyers should never ask a question to which they don't already know the answer. Does that sound familiar? But that should be happening in our classrooms every day. We ask questions we don't know. We invite kids to ask those questions. We want the kids asking it because they'll learn more if they ask the question. Priming the brain. These are the things the brain pays attention to. Pat Wolf's book, Brain Matters. The updated version, this is 2001, because that's where I got these. But the updated version just came out 2 months ago. And I forgot to update the slide. So to get the 2010 version of Brain Matters, extremely practical, getting up to speed, how the mind learns. Good ideas. This is just a poem. It looks at first, well, if you read the first 2 lines. Tell me what you think the poem is about, just after the first 2 lines. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But if you read the whole thing, it's about the Renaissance and other things, and Middle Ages moving into the Renaissance. But you wouldn't know that unless you had a background in the Renaissance. So before I actually do any new thing, I build prior knowledge experiences, so when I teach the new thing, it sticks. That's cognitive science 101. You really got to get up to speed on this stuff, because we're short of time. I'm just going to zip right through that. This is the idea that most teachers teach like that. They do clerical stuff at the beginning. They do review, or they do like do homework or clean up your desk area stuff at the end. And their lesson is in the middle. Again, does that sound familiar? Yeah. This is what gets moved into long-term memory. It's almost the complete opposite. Front end and the back end are best remembered. You want to move beyond that. What was your comment? Or is that just, that's a feather. Going up. Look from back here, like a hen going up in the air. How many feathers? Remember, you look at the top, not the bottom, right? Okay, good. Hey, look at that one. Shout out what you see. Keep it going.
13.
I know you're thinking it. You might as well say it. Well, I was going to say Dolly Parton from the top, but anyway. Sunglasses. All right, now everybody in the room answer the exact same question in a standardized test. What number less than 20 do you see?
13.
Good. Half of what insect do you see? What letter of the alphabet?
B.
You get 100% of my exam because I gave you meaningful context. So you can memorize that and recreate it for a quiz, but you wouldn't remember it in June. It has to have meaningful context. This is from Pat Wolf's Brain Matters book. It's that practical. So get up to speed on cognitive science. If you want to get into this, these are just some other ideas. And now, here we are. Lesson design. The reason I did all that other stuff is you have to avail yourself of those things. You have to run through your head. I do this like breathing. But I've done it for almost 30 years. So it's easy, it's natural for me. But I have to tell you, even my second, third year, I have more of a life when I differentiate than when I don't. I'm not running around putting out fires. You know, in the middle of the week, I take my wife out to dinner, in that middle of the week. I read for enjoyment. I play sports, not just coach them. When I differentiate, it's when I don't differentiate, I don't have a life. I'm not gonna sugarcoat this. It takes me about 2 hours, 3 different times during the week. How many hours is that? 6. Plus half the day on the weekend. So now total, how many hours? 10 to 12 or so to design one differentiated unit for like 3 weeks. Is that a lot of time? 12 hours to design a unit. The last 3 weeks. Maybe not. Depends. We don't always have a lot of time, but maybe it is. But now that I've done it, even just second year doing it, I don't spend nearly as much time. I just tweak it for the students I have in front of me that might be unique that year. I've done all the footwork. So again, it's hard at first. It gets so easy. I don't spend any more time planning than I ever did when I didn't differentiate. And kids learn the stuff the very first time, so I'm not spending so much time remediating, trying to overcome the bad pedagogy that created misconceptions as we went through it. So now, skip through that. This is part A. Look at number one, either the hard copy in front of you or up here. Part A, number one, how long does number one take to do? If it's the first time you've ever taught the unit. Is that 20 minutes? An hour. try the scale of weeks. Because you have to vet it. You have to read through all the standards and unpack them, and then check it out with other subject-like colleagues. And if you're the sole person who teaches that subject, you've got to go to the National Association and see what the national thinkers think. It takes a long time. When it says, understands fact versus opinion, it's understands, but also revises, can create, can write, whatever. It's not just understands, global, nebulous, whatever. You've got to really, really pull that out. That takes a long time. Number two, identify the kids who are different. This is your learning profiles, your class profile. I've got this many boys, this many girls. I got kids into this sport, kids in this sport. 504 this and IEP that. For those in Canada, IPP, whatever it might be. We've got it all. Now, third one, I actually type up, write out, whatever it takes, my assessments. What? Summative versus formative. Which one do you design first? Summative, begin with the end in mind. Where did he hear ideas for the summative assessment? From the standards, the objectives. So if it says, a student will identify the difference between this and this, what's the question? What's the difference between this and this? Very cool correlation. Where do I get my ideas for the formative assessment? The little checks along the way where you're allowed to revise your efforts and be assessed anew. Very important. Where do you get those ideas? From the summative assessment or the standards. They're little chunks you break off. So if I was doing a test on add, subtract fractions with different denominators, I would have a formative assessment on GCF and LCM. Greatest common factor, least common multiple, because that's a subset of skills. How about sublimation? I'm doing a test on sublimation. Sublimation, anyone? Gas. It doesn't go from gas to solid. From solid to gas by passing though the liquid. The air pressure isn't high enough to keep the molecules from escaping from the solid. Dry ice, anyone? So what's one of the subsets of skills or content you would need to know getting up into that? Phases of matter, yeah. Molecular behavior at the different phase. Things like that, air pressure, yeah, we'd have to know that stuff. I would test those things along the way. So we're gonna do all that stuff, as many as I can. If I cannot circle in your lesson plan where I see formative assessment, it's probably not the lesson plan you think it is. Can you have informal formative assessment and formal formative assessment? Yep. The formal stuff I better see, because that comes in your plan. Informal is the incidental stuff, observation. A real pop quiz right there you just think of off the top of your head. That's okay. Low practices, things like that, thumbs up, thumbs down, all those things. Good, that's fine. Although I actually write my lesson plan book sometimes, thumbs up, thumbs down, kind of to remind myself to do it. Because sometimes I'm in flow and I forget to do those things. So I'm gonna write it all out. Look at number four. You want to design your pre-assessment. Can you do them like a week or more ahead so you have the time to analyze the data from it and come up with learning experiences so that on day one, you can actually start teaching properly rather than wasting day one and letting all kinds of misconceptions happen. Five, how many of you have ever done a chore list where you list all the chores, all the tasks, what they are, and you like crossing it off because it makes you feel productive? Have you ever been working on one task and you think of another task? And so you real quick, you finish this one, then you go over and do that other one, and then you write it down a list just so you can cross it off. Makes you feel productive. That's what that is. Turns out when people design their assessments in a differentiated class, they think of really cool things that should have been the standards and weren't. Oh, that's a really good question. It's not my standards. Make it a part of the standards. Woohoo! So it's not a unilinear, a unidirectional. You can go back and forth. That's okay. Now, look at number one.
Did I circle this one?
Yeah, I did. And I think I did the other, yeah, I did. Okay, just took a book, sorry. Good. Number one, that's all we're gonna talk about, and then we're gonna zoom into the lesson design. Number one right there says, what experiences do I need to provide? So these kids with all their challenges and successes, all their differences, can every one of them can get to 100% on this lesson? What would my reputation be if every single child in my class got 100 on everything? Oh my gosh, he's so easy. There's a lot of cheating going on. Yet that's actually teaching heaven, nirvana. It's the ultimate. What? Because it's a sign that teaching and learning happen really well. How dare any of us think this?
I need like 40% of you to be mediocre so I can protect my rep.
No, the goal is every kid gets 100 on everything. And I might do something different for her than I do for her than I do for him to get them all to 100. It won't happen because life gets in the way. And the way schools are set up, they weren't ever meant to actually meet the needs of children. Okay.
Seriously, back to model, not meant to meet the needs of children. Get them through. Here's the curriculum. I've caught you making mistakes. I've documented it for everybody. We're done. See you tomorrow. That's not teaching. Is it? And you know how we go through the year. Those of you with me yesterday in the grading one, remember this. We tend to do this. Here's a bunch of stuff, take a test. Here's a bunch of stuff, take a test. Here's a bunch of stuff, take a test. You didn't get it when I taught it? Sucks for you. Join us when you can. No way to run a program. No way to teach the future of humanity. So we mitigate the negative aspects of the conveyor belt through this thing called differentiated instruction. Well, I'm going to do whatever it takes for you to get 100%. It will happen. We'll run out of time. But it's not, here's the curriculum, and here's the hoop, and let me see if you can jump through it. I'm talking about backwards lesson design. I just, there's even music with the such ideas. Although, if you can make your cell phone kind of go, ding, that'd be really better. Then we have, remind yourself after you taught the lesson, things you would change and improve the next day. Then we have classroom samples. If you want to really get into designing good lessons, then I would suggest you do hypotheticals. We're not going to take the time. I just want to plant the seed that you do this. So take a look. Students watch an instructional video. Every 10 to 15 minutes, the teacher stops, asks them to summarize. Is it DI? If not, what would you do to make it so? Is it DI? If so, then how do you know it is? Talking with each other with everyday scenarios makes you better at differentiated instruction, because when it really happens in your class, you have a ready set to call upon. You have a ready set of resources. You're thinking about this all the time. So I gave you a couple slides on that. Oh, one kid's not working, and the whole group is falling behind because one kid is uncooperative. What do you do? Thank you, Keanu Reeves, movie speed. What do you do? What do you do? Lots of ideas. That's our catalyst. That's our impetus. We are now sworn officers of the state and province of official educationdom. We should now do the lesson. Now, I'm going to require some interaction, so it's not going to be just me yakking at you. So if you weren't perky, would you get perky now? If your neighbor is feeling a little off, poke him gently in a non-private place. If they continue that, tickle them gently in a non-private place. Okay. Something that most of us would fully understand, something for the middle school curriculum, not some esoteric high school thing that we might have forgotten. I need a topic for the lesson. Anybody in the room, we're going to live on the wild side. Oh, your hand went up first. Go with what is it?
I'm special ed. I'm sixth grade.
Well, give me a general curriculum objective. You know those are because it's special ed.
They're multiplied by decimals by whole numbers, and they're multiplied by whole numbers. You have a product of a decimal and a whole number, and then we would say something like estimate the product. They would have to do two different things.
So estimate and do the multiplication. That's good. For purpose of example, it's perfect. Now, I remind you again.
Rick, I teach literary analysis. I teach how to do a layup in basketball.
This applies to you, Madam Chairman. So please understand, try to get the universal principles. Okay, you are now allowed to use anything in your wealth of experience, or I'd like to suggest the handout, to help guide this sequence. Look through the planning. 90% of DI is what you do before kids walk through the door. Teaching is anticlimactic. All right? So here we go. What's the first thing you do? I'll give you a hint. A1. Any ideas? In the front row. Learning profiles?
Oh, I don't think so.
See, if you're in the front row, you're usually super smart. Okay? I'm having fun at his expense, and I'm enjoying it. And your advisors say what? I would agree with that. Standards, outcomes, objectives, whatever you want. Now, the term that most people use is success for us is. It's the mastery learning phraseology. So as a result of this lesson,
And I'm going to write unit for a minute, and I'll explain that in a minute. Students will know and be able to do. Does that look familiar to you? All right. Then we might list what those are. So why did I say unit? Every single time. I mean, I swear to you, it happens every time. An individual teacher or a team sits down to design a differentiated lesson, it always explodes. It expands into this like 3 or 4 day or longer unit. That's actually very cool. Think about this. I go up to a group of kids. This group right here is not understanding what I'm talking about. I'm in the middle of my unit. They don't get it. So I keep doing the same stuff. Definition of insanity. So I don't. What I do instead is I look back in my choices, all my instructional ideas I brainstormed earlier, and I pull out some more fundamental stuff I wasn't going to do in the whole class. They were just backups in case I needed it. And I use that with them while I do something else with the rest of the class, or reverse it. These guys are so advanced. They finish a half an hour early. I pull up some of the more advanced stuff I wasn't going to use in the whole class, but I had all these options. I do stuff, that stuff with them while the rest of the class is working with the slower stuff. I am so well planned, so structured, down to the last detail, I can be impulsive. I can turn in a dime. We actually did this. At the State Department of Education in Washington, D.C., we had the teachers of the year, the exemplars. And I was doing a presentation to them. We're having a good time. But I said, bring your lesson plan books. We want to see what you guys have in common. About two-thirds of them obliged. They remembered. So they laid those all out all over the tables in a hotel ballroom. And we're all passing by looking at them. What were they all filled with? Or with what were they filled? There's the gooder English. They're all filled with eraser shavings, whiteout, post-it notes, cockeyed writing in the margins, arrows moving one thing over there, scribbles everywhere. These were messy, messy, responsive to individual student documents. These are my people. I worry about teachers who plan their lessons out 4 weeks in advance and stick to them no matter what. The laminated nature I must protect. Do I design my lessons 4 weeks in advance? You bet. But am I allowed to change things no matter what? Yes. What if you are in a building, unfortunately, and I apologize again to principals, but not so much, where you have to submit lesson plans on a Friday before you go home for the weekend for principal approval or some kind of approval? Can I just remind you, that doesn't change much in the classroom unless there's collegial review. So if you're just submitting the plans, you say, I submitted my plans, there must be response to the plan from somebody who's actually taught the subject. It's very important, okay? Otherwise, you're about control and compliance. You're not doing anything but breeding resentment. So a lot of times the principals ask me to submit my plans on Friday before I go home. I just say, no problem. I need your principal plans at my teacher desk before you go home on Friday. And so I walk over there next week. I better see what you're doing, what was in your plan. Otherwise, we'd let a reprimand in a file. Usually principals laugh it off nervously and walk out of my room. It's actually okay. But what if a principal comes up to you and says, I noticed you're not doing what was in your plan. And I say, here's what I found out about the students yesterday or this morning. And I decided to go this direction because it would have confused them. That principal better say something close to this. I want my own biological children in your class. Because you're responding to kids, not trying to protect the curriculum. Very important. Okay. So now, we've got standards and outcomes. When it comes to multiplying whole numbers, estimate product, students will know and be able to do, tell me, what are the standards? By the way, she doesn't have to respond to all of this. Even if you don't teach math, you can still do this. So I'll start us off. Given whole numbers, so single and two digit, we'll start there. Whole numbers, multiply them. Oh, maybe I should say successfully. 80%? If airplanes only landed 80% of the time, would you be satisfied? My goal is 100%. Now, for special ed, of course I'd say 80% like that because we would build up. So the eventual goal would be 100. All right, anything else within that? I'm just reminding you what it is. Oh, the estimate. So estimate the product of two decimals. How about analyze other classmates' work for critical errors? And
that might be something else they could do?
What?
That might be a task that will show that they can actually. Why do you put this other one?
Because I'm trying to break down the standard, and my department, something like colleagues, have decided that it can't be they can just multiply. They also have to be able to identify errors in the multiplication of decimals. That's a part of the overall understand how to do. But what you just said is something I was going to point out later, and it was going to be this aha moment. But we're going to go with it, because great minds think alike. You're just thinking ahead. When I wrote my book on this, my editor called me and said, Rick, you made a major blooper. When I wrote up my standards, my assessments and things, what got to the lesson part, and I just took whole chunks of the standards and assessments and put them in the possible instructional lessons. And she called me and said, oh, Rich, you were just editing so much. You were chunking this and moving this around. You actually wrote something twice by accident. No, I didn't. Assessment stuff, this stuff, makes great instructional strategy. And instructional strategy makes a good assessment. So when I get the instructional strategy, one of the things I'm going to do, I'm going to cut and paste, not cut, I'm just going to copy, highlight copy, and put the exact same assessments down in the instruction, and then we add more, of course. But don't you think that if I had kids practicing doing these things, that actually would be a good strategy for teaching them? I hope.
Well, it would be a good strategy for both teaching and assessing, but you said they're not examples.
They said what?
You said they're not.
They do, they're almost inseparable. So while the kids are doing this stuff, they're actually learning. And while they're learning stuff, they're assessing. Can you go back to what? Yeah, it works. Is there anything else, though, inside this idea of multiplying decimals and whole numbers that you would do? How about just the idea of know where to place the decimal? Oh, a place value, yeah. And proper place value. Oh, okay. Wow, that's not there. Okay, and all whole numbers. Is that okay? Is there anything else there?
Multiply decimals.
Multiply decimals. Did I say that? I said, yeah, whole numbers. Oh. Now, I would like to suggest something. There's another way to phrase this. What evidence will we tolerate? That sounds a little negative. I'm really tolerating it. But if you sit there and say, what's our standard? You don't get to a lot of good stuff. You don't get to the verbs. You don't get to the evidence. And you're evidentiary in a differentiated class. Everything rallies around evidence of the outcome or the standard. So you might want to say, what evidence will we tolerate if you do this? We would get real specific here. Like, what if they did this once? Would we think it was good? That was mastered? No. So how many times do we have to see it? I'm just going to close that in there for a short time. Lots of ideas. Let's go to the next thing, just for the sake of time. Two. What are we doing? Very well done. So we do one in here. How many boys? How many girls? How many boys? How many girls? Guys, it could be any way you want it. This is really crazy. How many ELL?
Three.
Or just a second language learners. Three? Good. I come from a community that has a lot of ELL. There could be three. It could be anything you want. How about a gifted, talented kid? Yeah. All of them is made up class full of this fine. LD? Good. Oh, if you want to, and it would affect their learning. Would ethnic groups affect their learning? Then you put it. So sports, TV shows, music groups, and then, of course, ethnic groups, free and reduced lunch. Anything that affects the learning. I'm just going to put that in there. Which one? Oh, anime, I mentioned earlier. And manga. Oh, I know. What? Oh, yep, yep. Oh, yeah. Did you say cheerleaders? Okay. You get the idea. Number three. Attendance would be in there, too, as part of those factors. I'm just pushing anchors in time. What are the three types of assessments in the order in which you would design them? Thank you. I heard three over there. Good. So where do you get ideas for summative? I'm agreeing with you. I'm just going through the process because I can't do more than one trick. I can only switch tasks. I can't multitask. Okay, summative. So I get all these ideas, these benchmarks that were up there, and I would put them more in benchmark form as I do that. But I have to think, what's a product that I could do where they would do this? So there might be, like, I'll put it down here so it makes a bullet to think. I might do a test that has all this stuff. I could do learning stations. Now those would be, sometimes learning stations are more used performative than summative, but it's okay, it could be summative. Yeah. I could do projects.
Yeah.
I could do scenario, real life applications. You know, whatever it might be. Now we're at formative. So what do I do here? Little chunks that we break off the summative. So little pieces, and we would list those. Then, I want to do pre. What's pre? Little chunks that we break off the summative. It could be the exact same thing. I will tell you this, it's much easier if your pre-assessments cut to the chase. Can you have summative assessments that are large and complex, weaving together lots of content? Yeah, would you do that? In my geography class, here's one of my tests. Design a country from scratch. Seriously, I do this a lot. It better have a plateau, a harbor, a peninsula, an isthmus, a latitude, longitude coordinate system. I want to know the physical geography impacts the economy of the region. I want a travel brochure, one book, tailor made, a constitution. I do all this cool stuff. Would I ever say for a pre-assessment before I start the unit, take 3 weeks and design a country from scratch so I can do before, after? No. I usually say, draw an isthmus on a piece of paper. What are those lines around the earth called? And if they're really written or drawn on the land and the water, you can see them from the air. They're very concrete thinkers. Over half my students over the years think you can see states, borders from the air. I'm not kidding you. You in the room, I bet you anything, most of you in the room, when you think of a certain state, you think of a certain color, because that was the color of the puzzle piece when you were learning your states. Forever, my whole world, Nevada will be yellow. Utah's green, Colorado red. Canada, what's the number one color for Canada in most world maps? Pink. Sometimes it's white, gray, green, things like that, but it's pink. So when I think of Canada, don't know why, don't know if Canadians like it, okay? But sometimes they do. I do a lot of work in Canada, and all of them go, yeah, we know, anyway. Not all of them, but some do. So now we've done all our assessments. Again, we're short of time, because I have a really cool thing I want to show you. Okay, and then what's the fourth one? Pre-assess, analysis. You know, you give them and you give it, and then five, adjust as necessary. All right, so what's part B, number one? Okay, here's what I'd like to suggest. There's gonna be six verbs you gotta be realized. Here comes the first one. I highly recommend You brainstorm every possible way to teach the thing that's ever existed on planet Earth. I'm serious. I'll go to the teacher's version of the Basel test, and I'll look for really good ideas in the margin. Anything ever there that you find is actually pretty good? Yeah. I'll go to some supplementary materials. I will get well read. I'll go on a listserv and say, what are all the ways I can possibly teach this thing? And get all the really cool ideas from that. I'll go any source I can find at the faculty meeting, team meeting. Well, give me three ideas for teaching inertia. Give me three ideas teaching inertia. Give me three ideas, and when I'm done, I'll compile a list for anybody who wants it. I will think quietly, reflectively in the shower and in the drive-in. It's a lost art. But now I have 19 ways to teach inertia. Will I use all of them? No, that'd be overkill, wouldn't it? It'd be redundancy. So, besides brainstorm, the next one is cluster. Cluster, I put the more advanced, way out there, cool stuff, multifaceted, complex, autonomous, versus the rudimentary, introductory stuff. So let me just clarify that. Advanced through introductory. Just list them all. So now I can choose where I'm going to go right in the middle of the lesson. After cluster, highly recommend you sequence it roughly in the plan book or on your computer. I'm going to do this first, this first, this first, this first. So far, do you see any DI in this one little section called design lesson? Have I taken something I knew about a kid and changed something as a result? No. Remember, DI is responsive teaching. A lot of school districts just call it that. They don't say DI because it has all kinds of emotional baggage. Okay, brainstorm cluster sequence. Here it is, correlate. I go through my lesson and I look for where I've met the needs, so I bring down my class profile. So the learner profiles. This kid is ADHD, where have I met his need? This kid is ELL. This kid is quite gifted. Have I provided the gifted in this lesson? You can call me on it. I don't mind accountability. Accountability is not a negative in my life. So you should be able to come up to me anytime and say, Rick, how did you differentiate structure? Or how did assessment inform one of your decisions? And I should say, oh, here it is. Not, can I get back to you after I talk to my union rep? Not gonna do it. So I'm gonna correlate with learner profiles. Then I'm gonna correlate with cognitive science principles. One cognitive science principle we mentioned, nothing goes into long-term memory unless it's attached to something already in storage. So I should create prior knowledge where there was none. I should be able to account for how I built up personal background so this will stick.
This is where you talk about, this is where did you do a pre-test?
Oh, sorry. I designed my assessments, and then I pre-assessed and did analysis thereof.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm going fast. Just where the clock. And you don't get between teachers and food.
I know.
And dinner's coming. Learner profiles, cognitive science. Wait, there's other areas. Your expertise in the unique nature of young adolescents. What I ever see in a middle school classroom, Kevin collecting the papers and the rest sitting at their seats. No. Because every kid, about every 10 to 15 minutes, has to move to relieve stress on the growth plates. So everybody gets up and walks across the room and turns in their stuff. This is me showing you my expertise on 10 to 15 year olds. So get up to speed. This we believe. Turning Points 2000. Meet me in the middle. Whatever it takes. You want to get up to speed on what's unique about it and what I did with the classroom? What's the fourth thing that you have to correlate? I'll give you a hint. So I'm going to go through and say, where's my flexible grouping? Where's my respectful task? Where have I tiered? Where have I scaffolded? The stuff you become an expert in by reading the books and going through all the training. But there better be evidence that I was studying, or that I can turn to anybody and keep a straight face. And actually, you actually can do this. And say, I didn't need to differentiate because they were all the same place, and here's my group I have. You don't differentiate 24/7. You only do it as warranted. Otherwise, we'd go crazy. Good to do it. So I'm going to take those in. So don't go full goose bozo with differentiation. Is that really okay? Now, I said there were six verbs. Here's something I'd like you to consider. By the way, there's a really cool new book that talks about this a lot. And it's, oh, two big gurus in the field. Let's see if you know them. Carol Ann Tomlinson. What's she famous for? Yeah. David Sosa. What's he famous for? Brain stuff. Neuroscience. Right? Here we go. Ready? Differentiation and the brain. Just came out this fall. It's really good. Read the back cover. You'll see a blurb from yours truly. It's a wonderful book. Oh, and there's a second one. I apologize for doing this. Advancing Differentiation. Richard Cash. You know what he does to you? Or for you? He does the DI stuff, right, practical? He shows you how to rebuild back in 21st century substantive thinking skills. Their critical skills at all the different levels. So it's great for teachers who are gifted, but also regular and struggling kids. Don't lose sight of that. It's one of the best books I've ever seen. It's called Advancing Differentiation, and it's from Free Spirit Press. The other one is from Solution Trio, I think. The one I told you about, Carolyn Tomlinson. If you just type in differentiation in the brain, and then advancing differentiation, you actually get those books on Google. I mean, well, Google, yes, but on Amazon and all those. Okay, wait, here they are. This is what they're thinking about. Yes?
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I have 2 minutes. Yeah.
And we had to with everybody
get up at the same time to turn in their papers. Oh, yeah. What you were just saying. So how could we have, I didn't like that because it was kind of sloppy. I'm sorry. I know they needed to get up, but if we had to lessen them this more active, where they had more movement. No, that was okay. They didn't need to do all that. That would have been okay. Sit, let them rest and let one kid collect. That's okay. But if you have a class where everybody's just sitting all the time and they never get up,
then it would
be okay.
Okay.
All right, so now, access is your sense-making. Oh, do you understand this? Is it clear to you? This is where most teachers in Canada, United States, and a lot of other countries have visited. Stop. Access. You know, how do the kids get access information? Video, lecture, practice problems. And all I do is I try to aspire to, does it make sense? That is not mastery. It doesn't lead to long-term memory. You know what leads to long-term memory? Meaning-making. Where I reprocess it, I recode it in terms of myself, my life. How does it provide leverage for something? How does it transform my thinking? How does it transform what I do? So one of the best things you can do is once you set all this stuff up, brainstorm, cluster, sequencer, go back and ask yourself, where am I having kids do sense making? Where am I having doing meaning making? Most teachers do sense making. Which one has the biggest advantage, the biggest effect? Meaning making.
Uh-oh.
I can't leave it to chance. I've got to focus. So think seriously about, where in my lesson am I doing meaning making? What does that look like? What does it mean? Differentiation in the brain has some really good ideas. I'll be glad to talk about it. I wrote an article I'll send to anybody who emails me on meaning making. How do you create meaning making in your class? So if you write a little bit of yourself, email Rick. Do you think Middle Ground Magazine? So if you want the full article because it has more ideas because the call space didn't work, you can email me. Okay. Middle Ground is a magazine. But it's not any other book I've done in terms of meaning making. So let's say you've done all your lesson plans. Here's what I suggest you do next. Ready? After planning, preparing, provisioning, do this. Doesn't he get it? Think about this. How many of you actually pay money to someone? They say, would you look at my lesson? Because lesson design is one of the most subjective things you do. I spend 2 and 3 days on this. Like, I'll do lesson design for 2 or 3 days, and you should look at my lessons. Missed opportunities right and left. Medical professionals, engineers, accountants, architects, everybody shares their protocol with other people. We all do that. It's really okay to share, open your practice to scrutiny of others, as scary as that is. It's actually one of the signs of a highly accomplished professional. So put it out there. When you have to articulate and defend your teaching, your strategies, your philosophy, you transform who you are. Really, it's weird. So many times teachers are isolationist and territorial. Let me close my classroom door. This is my fifth door. We can do better than that. So if you want to do that, you want to spend out, you want to provision, you want to do all the different things. Now we have access and process. But think about this. We have to do all this stuff. So we brainstorm and we just list forever. So let's list just a couple of ideas on how you teach decimal multiplication. Anybody have an idea? Well, that's not a strategy, that's a tool. So we could say,
strategy.
So how do we teach them? I actually think I would do Donald Duck and Matt Magic Man. I love that video, it's my favorite ones of all time. Oh, manipulatives, maybe? What were you gonna say? Bodies, they're like decimal moving around, and then the different numerical values. Grid paper. Oh, yeah, you line up everything. Perfect. But do you need to line it up when you multiply decimals?
No.
Well, no, but it does help keep things organized, but there's things you can do with it. All right? How about critical error analysis? I love that. I just keep putting up here. And you know what? You can actually see misconceptions better when they have to explain it writing than with oral, because they can use body language and vocal inflections and they get away with stuff that they really shouldn't have gotten away with. So writing stuff, in my math class, I taught math for 11 years in algebra and pre-algebra. So one of my favorite activities is, here's one problem done by 5 different kids. You have to do a written analysis of each one. That's the only homework you have, not 30 problems. Explore the concept by analyzing 5 different approaches. Were they successful? How do you know? Were they not successful? How would you teach your classmate? So you do it really well to do that. How about this? Practice problems in the book. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Sure?
Generate problems,
you said? Okay. Students generate problems, right? Obviously, students. By the way, if you ever have kids generate problems for the test, they're going to generate problems. If you tell them they're going to take the test, they're going to generate some easy problems. And you want to make sure that they generate some appropriate problems that they do it. So you might not totally want to let them off the hook. So you might mix it with your ideas and their ideas. Just something to think about. Anything else?
Try it with fractions and percents.
Try it with fractions and percents. Is that what you said?
Tie it to
fractions. Oh, tie it to.
Oh, like humans or something?
Yeah. You can do that. Well, you can just say, what's the difference in the process? I would also like to suggest this, because I think it's just really powerful. Generate analogies and metaphors that are helpful. Tie it to real world application. Now, there's a problem with that. School is very real world. So how about we just say the working world beyond school? Because it's not fake what's going on every day in a middle school classroom. I totally understand, and I use that same phrase. I'm just trying to move us beyond that. There's a token way we can express it. Use food. Why?
Right.
Okay? Go. Oh, yeah, I love that. And really, any kind of personal technology, if you weave it in. Anything else? Go. I like to visit general. I like cooking. Yep. Oh, yeah. Oh, and think alouds. Go.
Khanacademy.org.
Oh, I love that.
And it's
Oh, sorry. Khanacademy.org. Got tutorials. I'll put that back. Oh, it's allowed or something, yeah. Good point. Okay, let's stop for a second. Could we come up with 20 more? Think about this, though. A lot of teachers say, he doesn't do his homework. I tried the math box. There's no parent support. You can't do this. I mean, my hands are breaking. I've tried everything. Have you really? In those situations, those teachers have done this. I've exhausted my imagination. Can I drink from your creativity cup? And we have a problem. So at the end of this session, and we're getting very close to it, I'm going to show you a video, those of you who were at the yesterday side, so this 2 minutes, it's fine, that really helps you get over that in some way. The idea that you have to respond to your own creativity, you have to become a problem solver, is huge. Because you can't go back and go, ooh, let me see if that was in the handout. It's not in my handout, so it must not be solvable. Some other teacher will have to do it. That's not cool. You're a highly accomplished professional. I get classes all the time. I was teaching for 25 years, and I train teachers now in teaching, but I still get students I don't know how to teach. So I go to first-year teachers, I go to seasoned veterans, and everybody in between, and I say, do you have any advice for me? That's okay. That's not threatening. What would be unprofessional is if I said, I hope nobody finds out, I don't know what I'm doing. How many of you have ever, first time taught a unit, you're barely a page ahead of the kids? Do I really know the offer meant to symbolize this, or am I just saying it because somebody told it to me? I don't know if I'm teaching right. That's okay. We all have been there and we go there. It's okay to check things out. We would do the exact same thing with assessments. But here's the cool thing. We could take all bunch of assessments that we listed up here, all these things, and we could just simply highlight, click, and copy, and put them down below if we wanted to. And then all we have to do is we're going through a lesson and say, okay, basically, where am I going to start? I like that one first. That one second, that one third. And then I have to go, where have I met the needs of Miguel, Nakisha, David, and Jared? Oh, I got to put them in there, and I insert them in. Jared, we'll do this part instead. This part instead. Does that go over well in class? That I'm doing different things to different kids? Is that okay? How many of you know the $5 bill thing that I like to tell people? You guys know that one? Does it work? Put two $5 bills high up on the wall. So high up that only the tallest kid in the whole room, leaping, could reach him. Ask the volunteers. If you can grab one of them, you can have it. All the hands go up. Who do I call on? I heard that shortest. It's tallest. What? Tallest kid goes up. If it's middle school, probably a girl. She goes up, she leaps, and she gets it. Thank you. Have a seat. $5, $3. Woohoo! So one more there. Any volunteers? Hands go up, who do I call? Shortest kid. If that's middle school, probably a boy. He goes up, he's He goes over, he grabs a chair, and he starts dragging across the floor. And I'm like, no, that would be unfair. Your classmate did it under her own power. Put it back. So he's pulling the chair back. The rest of the class is, oh, Mr. W, that is so cold. He can't help it. Look at him. Really? Give me your rationale. Lawyer up. Do it right up. And they start giving me arguments that he should be allowed to use the chair. And I've actually had middle school classes chant. Use the chair. Really? I'm convinced you can use the chair. So he takes the chair, he puts it in position, he stands on it, grabs a $5 bill, returns the chair only if I tell him. Then I never again have to explain to my students why I would do different things for different kids to get everybody in the room to the same high standard. I give them a graphic organizer because they need it. They're struggling with text. I don't give them a graphic organizer. They're fine. Both groups take the same test the next day. Are their straight A's just as legitimate as theirs? Yeah, you change the path that all kids are still in the race. Carolyn Thomas has said that. It works. And you're trying to convince colleagues and parents, just tell them about the doctor's office or dentist's office. You know you're on the couch? You're reading highlights for children because somebody already took the adult magazines and filled out the Sudoku? And just at the last moment when you figure out the last object hidden in the leaves of the tree. Have you recognized what I just said? Go to your dentist more often? The dental hygienist comes out and calls your name and says, ready for a root canal. Whoa! No, I'm here for a teeth cleaning. No root canal. Just teeth cleaning. There's something wrong in the records. Please check. You go, oh, no. It's Friday. All day long. Anybody comes in, root canal for everyone. What a quack. You would never hire such a dentist. You would never go to such a dentist. You would never be fired at a dentist. What arrogance to assume diagnosed and undiagnosed, everybody gets root canal. It's the same clapper. It's the same arrogance. For you to stand in front of students and say, this is the only day or week you have to learn or demonstrate proof of mastery of direct and indirect object or forever hold your peace, child. It goes against everything we know. Why would you perpetuate that? Don't hide behind the fact you know. Fair isn't always equal. By golly, get accused of fairness. It means developmentally appropriate, but if they accuse you of being equal, shiver at the thought. You've let everybody down. Fair means developmentally appropriate, I'll take that. That means I might do different things to different kids. Now, don't sit there behind your desk and go, why don't I do the same things? How do I equal with all my kids? How do I do equal grades? No. How do I lead to what is the most learning for every kid? That's the better question. Now, because I'm kind of winding up here, let me show you the quick video and we'll say goodbye. If you've seen it before, just try to imagine, what does it have to do? Those of you with me yesterday, I did show it to you. So if you want to speak out, it's okay. But it really is a good way to laugh it off at the end of the day. What? Oh, see you. Yeah, I got to do that too. So that means your help captured until I finish it. Okay. If you want one to see you. Oh yeah, just email me, I'll send it right to you. I have to hold the microphone up to it because I don't have it. You know this one. Meanwhile, look at the CEO because of all you. 2 minutes. Okay, very good.